It was not difficult to flush with embarrassment. The sheepish, knowing smile was more of a stretch, but Radu had much practice. Thank you, Sultan, for the beautiful estate. She is overjoyed with the process of making it home. I am afraid I was quite in the way, and have already been banished until she has everything precisely the way she wants it. The men laughed knowingly. Kumal's smile was soft. Not for the first time, Radu wondered if he knew the true nature of his marriage to Nazira. But he did not have the courage to ask. If Kumal did not know, what would he think of Radu if he found out? Mahmed gestured toward a chair near his. Radu sat, wishing he could sink down and close his eyes. The home was lovely. A secluded estate, large enough to support a woman and her maid, a village within easy distance to purchase what their gardens and livestock did not supply. Nazira could not stop crying as she went from room to room, holding hands with Fatima. Radu had the spare bedroom, a warm and bright space. He did not anticipate visiting much. He held Nazira dear, but hers was a happiness so complete that it threatened to canker his soul. He did not want jealousy to cast any shade on her life with Fatima, and it had been agony for him to be that far from Mehmed. Just as it was now agony to be this close. A page came to the door, interrupting the conversation, which had shifted to crop plans. The boy bowed, trembling, and announced the arrival of an envoy from Constantinople. Mehmed's eyebrows rose, though it was his only discernible reaction. Other men in the room gasped or whispered in hushed tones. Though many countries had sent envoys with gifts and elaborate proclamations of congratulations, they had not expected one from Constantinople. Mehmed gave Radu an imperceptible glance. Radu nodded toward Halil. His face opened, and at ease, Mehmed turned to Halil. How do you advise me? Should I see them immediately, or make them wait? Halil's chest puffed like a tiny bird, chirping its importance to the world. I think it would be wise to see them right now, Sultan. Very well. Send them in. Three men entered. They were dressed in vibrant yellows, blues, and greens, and wore red boots. Each layer of elaborately stitched and brocaded clothing was styled to reveal the layer beneath, a gaudy display of wealth. Clothing was expensive, a symbol of status. The Byzantines apparently made every effort to show as much of their clothing at one time as possible. Large hats, like the sails of ships, covered their heads, and each man held something in his hands. Halil stood. I present the Sultan, the shadow of God on earth, the glory of the Ottoman Empire, Mehmed II. The three men bowed respectfully, though they did not remove their hats. We come on behalf of Constantine the 11th, Dragash Palaeologos, Emperor of Byzantium, Caesar of Rome, bearing gifts and petitions. They were invited forward. The gift, sent to honor Mehmed's ascension to the throne, was a jewel-encrusted book, colorfully illuminated with gold-leaf accents. After admiring it, Mehmed passed the book to Radu. As always, Radu felt a thrill opening a book. There had not been many in the castle at Turgo Viste, but the Ottoman Empire was so wealthy, there were many books. This one, written in Latin, told the story of Saint George slaying the dragon. Radu knew the story from his childhood. A holy knight, wandering through a heathen land, discovered a kingdom terrorized by a venomous dragon. The king's daughter had been chosen by lottery to be that day's sacrifice. Vowing to save her, Saint George fought and tamed the dragon. He led the princess and the dragon back to the city, holding the entire kingdom hostage under threat of death until all inhabitants agreed to convert to Christianity. His holy mission accomplished, Saint George finally slew the dragon. The book was an illuminated ancient story of a threat. Radu looked up at the envoy to find one member, a young man with clear grey eyes, watching him intently. The man blushed and looked away. An interesting choice of books, Mahmed said, amusement dancing on his face. Next, a letter from Constantine was read aloud, words as elaborate and ornate as the swirling borders of the book. Radu tried to pay attention, but there was so much circular praise, he soon lost interest and let the sentences wash over him, lulling him half to sleep. It sounded like the church of his youth, in love with its own voice, cold and inaccessible. Again he caught the grey-eyed young man staring at him. Radu did not know what it meant. Perhaps the young man was struggling to pay attention to the reading of the letter too. Then the name Orhan was spoken, jarring him out of the strange game of trading stares he had been playing. Constantine had not waited long before reminding Mahmed of the threat of his pretender to the throne. Worse, he had the audacity to ask Mahmed to increase payments to Constantinople for the keeping of Orhan. Mahmed steepled his fingers thoughtfully beneath his chin, waiting until the lead envoy member had finished reading. "My," he said as calmly as if he were commenting on the weather. "It would appear Orhan is an expensive guest." No one laughed. The tension in the room hung heavy, as though everyone had sucked in a breath and refused to relinquish the air. The envoys were pale. The youngest no longer looked anywhere but a fixed point on the wall. Though their faces were brave, sweat beaded beneath their hats, betraying their nerves at coming to the new sultan with such a demand. Mahmed turned to Halil. "You have more experience with Byzantium than I do. Does this seem fair?" Halil raised a trembling hand to dab at his brow. "Yes." He nodded to himself, as though encouraging his voice to be firmer. "Yes, I think the terms are quite reasonable. If I were to advise your grace, I would say we should agree to the demands. It is better to keep Orhan where he is, and to give Constantinople a show of good faith." Mahmed turned back to the envoy. "Very well. Halil, my esteemed vizier, will see that you are taken care of tonight. Tomorrow we send you home with news for our ally, Constantine, and a renewed era of goodwill between our great empires." The envoy's bows were less formal this time, their movements fast and deep with relief. The grey-eyed young man caught Radu's gaze one last time. A quick smile, like a secret, fluttered over his lips. Radu felt a matching flutter somewhere inside. Then Halil escorted them out, followed by his main advisers. Radu shook his head to clear it. He was still out of sorts from spending time in the country, and this was a big, interesting development. Mahmed dismissed most of the other men. He kept Radu, Kumal, Ilyas, the leader of the Adirna Spahis, and Kazancha Dogan behind. Under Radu's advice, Mahmed had decided to spare Kazancha Dogan for the time being. They knew he could be bought, and they needed every ally they could secure. Leaning back in his chair and stretching his arms overhead, Mahmed yawned. "My friends," he said, "I would like to discuss our navy." "What navy?" Radu asked. "Precisely." Mahmed's smile was a predatory fish slicing through the water. "Bring me reports on the ships we have, and, more important, the ships we do not have. And do it in secret." The men were wise enough to keep their curiosity modestly clothed with their expressions. Mahmed dismissed them, gesturing for Lada's soldier to wait outside the door. As soon as they were alone, the portent of bad news Radu had seen when he entered the room reappeared on Mahmed's face. "What is it?" Radu fought growing dread. "Are you upset with me? I am sorry I did not give you more warning of my marriage. I scarcely know how it all came about so quickly. But Nazira is..." "No, no. It has nothing to do with that." "I am happy for you," Mahmed paced, distracted, his words lacking any weight. "She is lovely and a good match. And you will still be here." He stopped and looked up, a hint of fear mingled with the trouble behind his eyes. "You will still be here." "Of course. I depend on you. I trust you as I trust no one else. Radu smiled, lifting a hand to his heart. And I you. Do you remember a man from your childhood? Larda's friend? Bogdan. Radu wrinkled his nose in distaste. Yes, they were always teasing me. He was an oaf. Mehmed scowled. He is here. What? Here. Nikolai found him. Panic clawed through Radu's chest, and he was suddenly eight again, too timid, too quick to cry, too easy a target. Bogdan had forced him to put on his nurse's shawl, taunting that if Radu loved her so much, he may as well be her. Worse had been the fear that, no matter what, his nurse would always love Bogdan more. No matter how hard Radu wished, Bogdan was her child. Radu her charge. Bogdan being taken away had been one of the highlights of his childhood, because it left him unlimited access to his nurse's heart. And Larda's. But now Larda was not his, had not been for a long time. And she had Mehmet. And she had Bogdan back too. A spot behind Radu's eyes pulsed with a stab of white, hot pain. I hate him, Radu cringed, knowing he should have censored his words better. But there was something triumphant in Mehmed's face, as though Radu had proved a point. Then Mehmed shifted again, abruptly turning away from Radu. I have had news from Valahia. It was late coming, and I wondered at the lack of a gift or emissary upon my crowning. He stopped pacing. Your father is dead. Radu understood the words, but they had no meaning. He shook his head, trying to clear it. His father, a high laugh echoed through the room, and only when he put his fingers to his mouth did Radu realize it was coming from him. Tuno, I cannot even recall what he looked like, only how he made me feel. Mehmed took Radu's hand. How did he make you feel? Like I was nothing. Radu could not look away from Mehmed's hand on his. And now, he is nothing. Mehmed was quiet for a few moments. Radu knew he ought to be sad, or ask questions, but he was more relieved than anything else. Vlad no longer existed in the world, and Radu could not consider that a bad thing. Would you like to know how it happened? Radu grunted his assent. It was Hunyadi, on behalf of the Boyars. They killed Machia as well. Poor Machia. I am certain that must have upset him. Mehmed's face drew closer to Radu's, interrupting his view of the ceiling. His brows were pinched in concern. Are you well? Radu put a hand to his forehead, pushing down against the lightness overwhelming him. I think I am. I tell you this because you are the heir to the throne. You are the next in line. And as Sultan, with Valahia as a vassal state, if that was what you wanted. Radu felt the weight of the world crash back down on him. Valahia, with endless dark trees and fists in the forests, with fountains that brought gasping, choking mouthfuls of water instead of beauty, with winters as cold as a father's dismissal. Valahia, with Larda back with Bogdan, not needing him, not seeing him, not caring. Valahia, with no mosques, no call to prayer, no god that knew or cared for him. Valahia, with no Mehmed. He grasped Mehmed's shoulders. I know it would help you to have someone you could trust on that throne, and I want to serve you, to do whatever I can to help you gain Constantinople and be the sultan your empire has waited for. I will do whatever I can, but please, I beg you, do not ask this of me. I want nothing from Valahia, as it never wanted anything from me. My home is here, with you. Please do not send me away. Mehmed's face smoothed with relief, and he folded Radu into an embrace. Radu drew a trembling breath, breathing in Mahmed, steadying himself.
Say nothing, Dalada, Mahmed said.
Radu nodded against his shoulder, and this one time held on for longer than was safe, because he could not bear to let go. 49. Lada's skin was too tight. There was not enough to contain everything she needed it to. It stretched and itched, phantom sensations crawling across her neck, muscles twitching in desperation. Bogdan walked on one side of her, Nikolai the other, buffers against the chill of the evening. It was her first free night in over a week. Mahmed had demanded her presence every waking hour, constantly making some excuse for why he needed her, specifically on guard duty, or why he needed her advice, or why he simply needed her. Those particular needing sessions burned deep and low, and she shuddered.
Are you well? Nikolai asked.
She walked faster. It felt right to have Bogdan next to her, like a return to how things had been. He fell into step without hesitation, her shadow, her right hand, hers as he had always been, even across the years. But she was not the same person. She had grown, distorted, become something new, and the Lada she had been with Bogdan, the Lada she wanted to be around him, was not the same Lada she was with Mahmed. Nikolai and Bogdan both stared at her, as though waiting. Waiting for what? She wanted to snap at them, to hit them, to make them leave with their constant, unasked question. Why? Why was she still here? The question did not seem to exist when she was alone with Mahmed, but as soon as he was gone, it covered her like boils, an itching plague upon her soul. Why was she still here? What had become of the girl who was the daughter of a dragon? Was this it, then? Had she reached the pinnacle of her potential? A command of 50 men in service of a man she loved, who ruled an empire she loathed? What more is there? She snarled. Bogdan and Nikolai both stopped, staring at her with confusion. What more is there to what? Nikolai asked. She jabbed a finger into his chest. Stop talking to me. Stop looking at me. Stop expecting me to solve this. Nikolai's lips parted in a tentative, baffled smile. If I understood anything you were saying, I absolutely would endeavor to obey. As it is, I think I will steer us toward a merchant who has a stock of juice that has been kept far too long and turned sour in the best possible way. An orange haze lighting the night gave them all pause. Fire. 4 years ago, Lada had walked these streets, imagining raining fire down on them. Her heart leaped with joy, needing to be closer, to find the fire and feed it. Is that smoke? Nikolai asked. Lada ran forward, ducking around vendors, packing up their stalls for the night, Bogdan and Nikolai on her heels. It became harder to advance as they got closer to the fire. People fled past, faces white with panic. Finally, they burst into the main market. In the center of the square, a massive bonfire greedily reached toward the sky, sparks dancing up through the smoke. Lada wondered if she had missed some sort of festival. And then she saw what was feeding the fire. And who? Yanacheris ran wild, ripping apart vendor stalls with their bare hands, tossing everything into the flames. They were grouped around the side streets, blocking them. Lada climbed the side of the building next to her, Bogdan steadying her. She could see several other fires starting all along streets leading toward the city outskirts. They are moving away from the palace. She jumped down. How did this happen? Bogdan shrugged.
Revolt. There have been rumbles about it since Murad died.
But Mahmed is going to raise the pay. He and Kazancha Dogan made an agreement before he became sultan.
I heard nothing of a raise. If they negotiated one, no one told any of the men here.
Lada wondered now who Bogdan had become in the time they were apart. He betrayed no emotion, though. She slammed her fist into the wall. Kazancha Dogan betrayed us. He could not keep Mahmed from the throne, but he played both sides.
So They burn some buildings. Maybe scuffle in the streets with Spahis.
Nikolai's eyes glowed as they stared at the fire.
Mehmed will raise their pay. And it will all be settled.
It makes no sense. Larda watched as the fires spread, still moving away from the palace. What did Kazancha Dogan stand to gain by letting his men revolt?
He already knew Mehmed would raise the pay. Maybe he was trying to get it even higher, but...
The fires, she said, her heart racing. They are drawing soldiers to fight them.
Yes, Nikolai drew the word out as though speaking to a child. Fires do need to be put out, lest the whole city burn.
Play Kill the Sultan with me, Nikolai. Think. The fires are moving away from the palace. The soldiers are moving away from the palace. All eyes are moving away from the palace.
Understanding tugged the scar between Nikolai's eyebrows flat.
They are going to kill Mehmed. Petru and Matei are there tonight. I do not know the other men well. They could be part of it. We have to get to Mehmed.
Streets are blocked, Bogdan said.
If he had an opinion on which side they should be supporting, he did not show it. But he was right. Each street leading back to the palace was filled in by rebel Yanacheris.
I only have knives,
Larda looked hopefully at Nikolai, but he shrugged, holding out his empty hands.
You have nothing?
Not all of us sleep armed, Larda.
How are we going to get through the men?
Bogdan walked over to a stool that had been partially dismantled. A couple of rebel Yanacheris were there, but they saw his cap and nodded, whooping loudly. Bogdan reached through the stool to the heavy wooden door of the building it abutted. He opened the door, grabbed the top, and wrenched the entire thing from its hinges.
I think he is a very different type of Valahian than I am, Nikolai noted.
Bogdan turned the door sideways, holding the latch like a handle.
Larda laughed in understanding, getting behind the door next to Bogdan.
Nikolai joined them.
With a roar louder than the fire, Bogdan ran forward.
Larda pushed against the door, matching his pace. Wishing she could see the soldiers' faces, she still felt the impact as they slammed into the men who failed to dive out of the way fast enough. Nikolai tripped, rolling and coming back up with a sword in his hand. Bogdan never slowed. He cleared their way with the crack of wood meeting bones with crushing force. Larda looked over her shoulder to see two men pursuing them. She threw one of her knives, and it was met with a wet thud and a scream. Stopping abruptly, she somersaulted beneath the second man's sword and grabbed the first man's from his slack fingers. The clang of metal on metal jarred her to her core. She bared her teeth in a smile as she screamed, throwing herself at her attacker. He went for her head, and she dropped to her knees. A hot spray of blood confirmed her slash against his hamstrings. No time to finish him. She sprinted to catch up to Bogdan and Nikolai. They had become mired in a mix of terrified civilians and a mass of Yanacheris. The Yanacheris were shouting, obviously confused about what was going on and not aware of the revolt. Bogdan threw the door aside, shoving through to get Larda clear.
Revolt that way, Larda shouted, pointing. Glory and honor if you protect the Sultan by my side, this way.
Finally clear of the melee, she sprinted. She did not bother to look if her rallying cry had gathered any men to her side. But the footfalls around her were far more than just Bogdan's and Nikolai's. The gates of the palace gaped, open and unmanned.
Trust no one, Larda shouted. Yanacheris or otherwise. Disarm everyone. Secure all the doors.
The dozen men with her entered the main door, swords at the ready. She ran for a side entrance used by kitchen servants, kicking the door open. She braced for a fight, but found none. She wound past the kitchen and up a flight of stairs hidden behind a dusty, worthless tapestry. Nikolai and Bogdan stayed close on her heels.
How do you know about this? Nikolai asked. It leads directly to the Sultan's chambers.
Larda did not have time to be embarrassed about the revelation of her intimate knowledge of secret passageways to Mehmed's bed. This one was used by the kitchen staff, so there was no chance of someone accessing his food between when it was sampled for poison and when it was delivered. Larda had used it to sneak down and steal food when they had stayed up late into the night talking, and not talking.
The hall was eerily silent behind the thick stone walls that sealed them off from whatever was happening elsewhere in the palace. Larda could scarcely breathe, images of what would await her at the end flashing before her eyes. Mahmed dying. Mahmed dead. Mahmed's purple robes soaked in darkest red. Mahmed's black eyes gone permanently dark. Larda knew no one would ever look at her the way he had. If she lost that...
Eva, they are already in the room, and we are too late, she said, gasping for breath. Or they have not yet reached his apartments, and we can still stop them. Here.
She shoved open a secret door that led to the grand hall outside Mahmed's apartments.
Secure his door!
She did not wait for Nikolai or Bogdan to agree before ducking back into the hallway and running for the entrance to Mahmed's rooms. If he was dead, she had to know. She had to make them pay. She slammed her shoulder into a door hidden behind a tapestry in one of Mahmed's sitting rooms. Then she ran through, ripping the tapestry free from its hanging rod. Mahmed stood, mouth open in shock. Radu was barely visible in the next room, a tall, lean Yanacheri's hand on his arm and the man's mouth next to his ear. No one was panicking. No one was dead. And Elias, not Kazancha Dogan, was standing beside Mahmed. Larda slumped against the wall, relief robbing her of the fire that had chased her here. Other than the door that connected them to the hall containing Radu and the Yanacheri, the only other entrances to the sitting room were the one she had come through and the balcony. They would need to move to a more secure location. She closed the hidden door, barring it with a tapestry rod.
What is this about? Mahmed asked, incredulous.
Revolt! Yanacheris! I thought... I feared it was a distraction, that they were trying to assassinate you.
God's wounds, Elias said, but he did not sound shocked. He sounded tired. He walked over and nodded to the Yanacheri with Radu, before closing and locking the heavy door to the sitting room. Larda crossed over to it, shaking her head.
We should move to a more defensible room, one without a balcony. Someone could climb in or jump over from Mahmed's bedroom balcony.
Elias sighed, pulled out a dagger, and slid it into Larda's side. 50.
The Yanacheris are revolting, Radu asked, shock robbing him of coherent thought.
It would seem so. Lazar's voice was bright, his eyes darting to the locked door between them and Mahmed.
But we are raising their pay.
Lazar raised an eyebrow.
We?
Radu shook his head.
Mahmed. He met with Kazancha Dogan before Murad died. It was all arranged.
It made no sense for the Yanacheris to revolt now. They were being paid more than ever before. What had Radu missed? How had he failed to anticipate this move by Halil Pasha?
Doubtless it will work itself out.
Lazar licked his lips, then startled as banging echoed down the hall from the palace entrance to Mahmed's apartments.
Is that Petru?
Radu stepped toward the door. Elias had sent Petru and Matei to the outer hall so he could discuss confidential plans with Mahmed.
Why is the outer door barred?
Elias must have locked it after they left. Smart. Safer that way.
Lazar bounced up and down on the balls of his feet, gaze flitting between the two locked doors like a moth against a lamp's glass.
Maybe we should check Mahmed's chambers. Look out over the balcony to see what is going on in the city.
There was more banging, louder now, and accompanied by shouts. Panic seized Radu.
Do you think the revolt has made its way here? What should we do?
Help will arrive soon.
Lazar took Radu's elbow, pulling him toward the other end of the apartments.
We really need to check Mahmed's bedroom.
That sounds like Nikolai shouting.
We should let them in.
No.
If the fighting has gotten to us, they need to defend the door.
We should position ourselves in Mahmed's bedroom in case someone tries to come in that way.
Stop.
Radu pulled his arm free.
We need to think this through. We should get Mahmed to a better location. The room they are in has a balcony too. It is not safe,
and only Larda and Ilias are in there with him. The pounding turned into rhythmic slamming. Someone was trying to break down the door. Radu could still hear Nikolai shouting. It made no sense. If they had been overpowered, he would be dead, not shouting. In the sitting room, Larda shrieked with rage and pain, the wall shaking as something smashed against it. Mehmed. Radu ran to the door, wrenching at it, but to no avail. Help me, he said, casting about for some tool to unlock it. The hall was filled with plush furniture, everything padded and soft. There were no utensils, no pens, nothing that was not gold and delicate. Radu had a knife in his belt, but it was too thick to jam into the keyhole. Radu, we have to break it down. Radu, why is there nothing useful in this whole damn room? Radu shouted, kicking over a cushioned footstool. Lazar grabbed his wrist, yanking Radu around to face him. Please, listen to me. His voice was low, too calm. Lazar did not understand the trouble they were in. Even Radu did not understand it. There was so much noise from so many places. He needed to get to Mehmed. Lazar did not release him. There is nothing you can do. What are you talking about? We can do something. We have to. We... Radu stopped. Lazar did not look panicked. He looked sympathetic, sorrowful. It was definitely Nikolai yelling, accompanied by Petru. They were shouting for Larda, screaming to be let in. They would never do that if enemy forces were outside. You pulled me out of the room, Radu said, his stomach sinking as the truth settled like lead. You do not expect help to come. You are counting on it not to. Let me explain. Radu twisted his wrist free, darting for the door where Larda's men were trying to get in. It was blocked by a bar easily lifted from the inside. Lazar tackled him from behind, Radu's head meeting the tile in a blinding flash of lights. Please, he said, knee digging into Radu's back. I was trying to keep you safe. Radu spat blood from where his lip had been cut open. Keep me safe. You were not supposed to be here tonight. You were supposed to be with your bride. When Ilias told me you were back, I begged him to let me come along, to keep you out of it. Radu squeezed his eyes against the pain and despair, arms trembling as he tried and failed to push himself up. Why is Ilias betraying us? He is protecting us. You are not a Yanacheri. You cannot understand. All we have is each other. No one else cares about us. No one else values us as anything other than bodies to be thrown at enemies in the name of the Sultan. The muted sound of blades from Mehmed's room drew a sob from Radu. Lazar leaned his head down, resting it against Radu's back. I am sorry. I know you care about him. I know. But he would spill our blood against the walls of Constantinople. Ilias will not let that happen to us. He is our father, not Mehmed. It has to be like this. No! Tell me. Tell me that Mehmed will not kill us. Lazar waited, but Radu could not. He knew Mehmed's heart was set on Constantinople. He wants it as a dragon wants a jewel, merely to possess, merely to feed his hunger. He will never be satisfied. You saw what the siege of Cruj was. It will look like a holiday compared with Constantinople. We will all die, and no one will mourn us. These are my brothers, Radu. Lazar's voice cracked, and his warm tears found their way through Radu's tunic. They are the only family we have. If you think about it, you will understand. You will forgive me. I love you, Radu. Please. Please forgive me for this. I would sacrifice anything for my family. You would too. Radu stopped fighting and released himself to the floor. Lazar's weight was heavy against his back, the same as that patrol night in Cruj when Lazar had tackled him to save his life. Larda would die defending Mehmed.
Mahmed would die. But Lazar was right. If Mahmed lived, so many of the Yanacheris, his friends and companions, would die. All to take a city that threatened nothing. Only because it was their dream. Because the Prophet, peace be upon him, had declared it so long ago. Radu turned his head, trying to look back at Lazar. Still keeping Radu pinned, Lazar shifted his weight so their eyes could meet.
I am so sorry, Radu said.
Lazar had saved him so many times. Saved him with kindness as a child. Saved him on the battlefield. Saved him tonight.
I love you too, my friend.
Lazar's face lifted with hope. Radu answered that hope with a stab. His hand freed just enough to shove his knife into Lazar's stomach. Lazar rolled to the side, hands clutching his wound. Bright blood spilled between his fingers. Radu knelt over him. He threw Lazar's sword across the room, then pressed his forehead to his friend's.
I am so, so sorry.
Lazar gave a lazy, lopsided smile. It broke Radu's heart.
You always choose him.
I always will, Radu whispered.
Then he ran, leaving Lazar to die alone. The door to the palace hall was barely splintered despite Larda's men's continuous attempts. Radu called for them to stop, then put his shoulder under the bar. They had warped the door, and Radu let out a cry of rage as he pushed up with all his might. Finally, the bar slid free. Radu ran straight for Mahmed's bedroom.
Mahmed is in there,
he shouted, pointing to the locked sitting room. He scanned the bedroom, hands bloody and mind utterly focused. Long curtains were draped from the wall, held by a rod. Radu backed up, then ran and leaped, grabbing the rod and swinging his body until it tore free with a metal scream. He carried the rod onto the balcony, too far from the room where Larda and Mahmed were. They were not dead yet. They were not allowed to be. Radu could not leap from one balcony to the other. The distance was too great. He threw the rod across the gap, barely catching the curtain before it all followed. The rod clattered to the stone floor on the other balcony. Curtain pulled taut. Radu yanked it, praying. The rod caught, snagged on the stone railing. Wrapping the curtain around one hand, Radu climbed onto the edge of the railing and jumped. The impact of the fall jarred his arm, nearly pulling it from its socket. He cried out in pain, then pulled himself up, every muscle screaming in protest, until his free hand found the edge of the balcony. With one last burst of strength, he climbed up. He was in the darkness, looking in at the brightly lit room. The scene inside was a nightmare. Mahmed crouched, weaponless, in a corner. One good hit would be all it took to murder him. It was a testament to the wonder of Larda that that had not happened yet. She was all over the room, ducking and twirling and screaming. Her blade clashed with Elias's, denying him at every turn. Though Radu had missed the beginning of this story, he could see the end. Larda was bleeding heavily, every footstep smearing her life against the delicate floral patterns of the tiled floor. She favored her right arm, and her breathing was too heavy, too fast. All Elias had to do was outlast her, and they both knew it. She fought with everything she had, and he stepped around her with the ease of a partner in a dance. Neither had noticed him yet. Radu went to draw his sword. He did not have a sword, or a knife. He had been so desperate to get into the room, he had not thought what he would do once he got there. Bleak surrender threatened to pull him under. He had murdered his oldest friend. Now, as a reward, he would watch his only family and his only love killed while he stood by, unarmed and useless. All his wit and charm amounting to nothing in the end. He would at least die by Mahmed's side. He stepped forward,
nearly tripping on the curtain. The rod. Radu yanked it free of the railing, letting the curtain fall free. Larda slipped on her own blood, crashing to the floor, sword trapped beneath her hand. Ilias raised his blade. He was close enough to strike either Larda or Mehmed. Radu did not know who Ilias would kill first, and he could not protect them both at once. He chose Larda. With a scream, Radu ran in front of his sister, holding the rod. Ilias's sword fell on it, the force nearly jarring it from Radu's hands. Larda kicked out at Ilias's knee, forcing him to stumble back. Larda looked at Radu, wide-eyed with surprise. Then her focus snapped into place.
"Get him to turn his back to the balcony," she hissed.
Larda stood as Radu shifted sideways, angling to put himself between Ilias and Mehmed. Larda darted to Ilias's other side, swinging her sword wide in a lunge so predictable even Radu could have blocked it. Ilias took advantage of her opening, filling the space she had left. The space right in front of the balcony door. Ilias's sword sliced through the air. At the last possible moment, Larda dropped backward onto the floor, screaming,
"Now!"
Radu braced the rod at shoulder height and ran forward with everything he had left. The rod slammed into Ilias, catching him off guard. He stumbled backward, but Radu did not have enough momentum to push him off the balcony. Larda appeared at Radu's side. She grabbed the end of the rod and pushed it like a door, hinging hard to the right so Ilias was knocked off balance. The backs of his legs met the stone railing of the balcony, and Larda followed the swing of the rod. Ilias fell. But Larda could not stop, her momentum carrying her forward. She tipped over the edge of the railing. For one moment, the world died, hanging lifeless and devoid of air in front of Radu. And then he felt the rod being wrenched from his hands. He tightened his grip, twisting so the rod was under his armpit.
"Hurry,"
Larda said, and in her voice he heard the girl he had grown up with, the girl who always chose to be fierce instead of scared, the girl who was now terrified.
"I cannot hold it."
Radu pushed down on the rod, using the railing as a fulcrum. The metal bent but was strong enough to pull Larda back. As soon as she was level with the balcony, Radu threw himself forward and grabbed her blood-slicked hands. He tipped her up, falling backward with her on top of him. She was shaking all over, trembling as he had never seen, delirious with blood loss and fear.
"You saved me," she said.
"Of course I did." She shook her head.
"Not when I was falling, when Ilias had us both on the floor. You chose me over Mehmed."
"You are my family," he whispered. Lazar had been right, after all. He held her, stroking her hair and crying, the sound of the door finally breaking open, and Larda's men pouring into the room, a distant, dull roar. 51. Ilias had not died in the fall, though Larda suspected that he wished he had. She was surprised to find Kazancha Dogan exonerated by the information the prison guards extracted from Ilias. Kazancha Dogan had not been in on the assassination plot, merely encouraged to hold Adirna hostage for even higher pay increases. It had been a simple matter for Ilias to walk through the palace, commanding Yanacheris to go into the city and put out fires, leaving only him and his accomplice Yanacheri to know the truth of the mission. Larda shifted on her seat, her side complaining doggedly when she moved, and when she did not move, and when she did or did not do anything at all. She did not feel like herself, head aching and tired after even modest exertion. Still, she would heal. She glanced over at Radu. His eyes were unfocused as he stared at the courtyard. The head gardener raised the stake, planting Ilias. Ilias, who had allowed her to train with his men. Ilias, who had given her a chance to prove herself
and accepted it when she did. Ilias, who had given her responsibility in an empire where she should have been invisible. Ilias, who had stabbed her. She did not know whether to hope he died quickly or lingered in agony. His accomplice was more fortunate, having bled to death on the floor while a physician sewed larder together with black thread. "You did him a kindness," she said to Radu, her voice low so it would not carry beyond them to Mahmed or the gathered officials. Grand Vizier Helil was there. He had not been implicated, but he was also in charge of the rotations of prison guards who extracted the information.
"Who did I do a kindness?" Radu did not look at her, his tone lifeless.
"The Yanacheri you killed. The accomplice." A spasm of pain twisted Radu's features.
"Lazar. His name was Lazar."
"You knew him?" Radu did not respond. Larda wished for some sense of what to do, some knowledge of the ways people comforted each other. Were their positions reversed, Radu would know what to say. "Was he the first man you have killed?"
"No. But he is the first I murdered."
Larda scoffed. "He was a traitor. And you saved him the agony of prolonged death. It is more than he deserved."
"He was only there to protect me."
Radu gave her a bleak grin she did not recognize, a tortured imitation of humor.
"He was worried I would be hurt."
Larda reached for Radu's hand and was surprised when he accepted it. She squeezed once. "You saved all our lives."
"You once told me some lives are worth more than others. How many deaths before the scales tip out of our favor?"
She had no answer. With Ilias executed, the official story was that the Yanacheris had simply revolted, behaving badly as they occasionally did. That same afternoon, Mahmed had Kazancha Dogan dismissed and publicly flogged until his back was more blood than skin. He announced a universal pay increase for the Yanacheris, as well as sweeping reform in the structure of the military. Mahmed would be the head. Every thread of power and authority would start and end with him. A few days after the attack, Larda was strong enough to join Mahmed in his study to go over the restructuring. Radu was already there. He looked haunted, moving too quickly through the outer rooms, eyes fixed ahead. Larda remembered the hillside forest she could no longer enter in Amarcia, and felt pity for Radu. She was about to suggest they move to the gardens when they were surprised by the arrival of a eunuch escorting Halima.
"Halima Hatun," the eunuch announced.
She bowed, straightening with a shy smile for Larda and a low wave. Larda had forgotten how pretty she was and quickly tamped down a flare of jealousy.
Mahmed would not want a woman who had borne his father's son.
Mahmed stood, confusion masked with a bright tone.
"Halima, to what do I owe the honor?"
"You sent for me to discuss my future. The messenger said..."
"Yes," Mahmed nodded, gesturing for her to sit.
He gave Larda and Radu a puzzled look when her back was turned.
"Yes, your future. Are you well?"
"I am, thank you."
"And little Ahmet?"
Her face transformed with eager joy.
"He has much spirit. I think he and Bayezid are nearly the same age."
The name of Mahmed's son stabbed Larda in a place other than her side. She shifted uncomfortably, wishing Halima would leave.
"Oh,"
Halima put a hand to her mouth in embarrassment.
"I have not offered my congratulations on the birth of Mustafa. Two sons. What good fortune."
"Another son?" Larda spoke before she could stop herself, the words leaving her more wounded than Ilias had. "Another son. And this one not conceived before their first kiss, before Mahmed made her feel as though she were the only woman in the world who mattered. Another son." Radu was all false cheer.
"With so much excitement, you must have forgotten to mention it."
Mahmed cleared his throat, not looking at them.
"Yes, Gulsa had to stay behind in Amarcia. It was not safe for her to travel so far into her confinement.
I received word only yesterday.
How did you know?
Halima tipped her head conspiratorially.
Huma told me. She knows everything.
Yes, she does. Well, I am afraid I have nothing official to tell you. If I can do anything for you while we arrange for your future, please let me know. You are welcome to stay here as long as you wish. This is your home.
Lada wondered why he had not yet sent Ahmet away and separated him from his mother. But even that was quickly pushed aside.
Gulsa.
Who was she? What did she look like? When had Mahmed visited her? What had he thought about while he planted his seed in yet another woman? Halima bowed prettily, and Lada caught a flash of relief in the other woman's face that the interview was over. After Halima left, Lada kept her eyes fastened on the door. Drowning in her own pool of misery, she could not look at Mahmed. How could she continue to ignore the harem if its occupants did not stop giving birth to Mahmed's sons?
No one spoke. As though Lada's obsessive thoughts of the harem summoned her, Huma appeared in the doorway.
Mother, Mahmed said the word with tiredness, not reverence. I did not send for you.
Just as you did not send for me when Ilyas tried to kill you.
How did you? Mahmed sighed, rubbing his forehead.
I have taken care of it.
No, you foolish boy. You have not. I have taken care of it.
Mahmed's exhaustion gave way to barely concealed anger.
What do you mean?
When will you realize that they see you as expendable? Because there is another option living under your very protection. If you can be replaced, they will try to do it. Again and again and again. And all it will take is one dagger, one poisoned meal, one moment where you are not on guard, and then my sacrifice will be for naught.
It is not your concern.
It is my only concern.
But never worry, my stupid little boy. I have done what all your guards could not. I have made you irreplaceable.
Lada sat up, previous conversations with Huma humming through her mind with sudden intensity. A wrongness seized her stomach and would not release it.
Mahmed did not send for Halima, she said.
Huma lifted her emaciated shoulders dismissively.
While she was meeting with the Sultan, her son was drowned.
Mahmed exploded across the room, pressing his mother against the wall.
What did you do?
What I have always done. Protected you.
No! No, tell me you did not. He is an infant.
He was a threat. And now he is gone.
For the endless span of a single breath, Lada thought Mahmed would kill his mother. Then the tension fled his body. He staggered back, falling into a chair.
He was the same age as Bayezid. I have done what you were not willing to. I have secured your legacy. You are now free to be the Sultan you were born to be. The Sultan I gave birth to.
My son. My empire. Get out.
We should discuss, Mahmed stood.
Rage gone. Despair gone. He stared down at his mother with all the icy authority he commanded.
Guard.
Stefan, the Yanacheri on duty, stood at attention.
Please, escort Huma to her rooms. Bring as many men with you as you need. See that she does not speak with any of her attendants, and that the eunuchs are barred from communicating with her. I will send directions for where she is to be taken.
Huma shook, her thin, yellowed lips pulled back to reveal grey gums and more black spaces than teeth.
What are you doing? You cannot send me away. I am the Valid Sultan, the mother of the Sultan.
No, Mahmed said. You betrayed me. You are nothing.
Betrayed you? You have no idea what I have done for you. How many times I have saved your life. If going behind your back to keep you alive is betrayal, then they should be banished with me.
She pointed a bony, twisted finger at Lada and Radu. Mahmed waved in disgust at Safan. He took Huma's arm and led her, wide-eyed and shaking, out of the room. Lada thought they had escaped, but then Mahmed turned on them.
What was she talking about? What did you two do?
Radu looked like a rabbit caught in a trap. Lada understood his fear. Mahmed would never forgive them when he found out their role in his loss of the throne during his first rule. And Huma had no reason not to tell him. Not now. She had no more leverage to employ, and Lada had no doubt she would try to burn everyone down with her. Tears filled Radu's eyes, despair pulling his head low. He was no longer the man Lada did not know. He was the boy on the ice, the boy in the forest, the boy in the thorns. He was hers.
Radu had nothing to do with it, Lada said. It happened when you first came to the throne, after I killed the assassin Yanacheri. I knew it would never stop.
Radu was certain you could be Sultan. He was stupid and short-sighted, so I went to Huma. It was my idea to have the Yanacheri's revolt then, to contact Halil and work with him to get your father back to the throne.
Lada watched as shock and anger transformed Mahmed's face from the one she knew and loved into something too distant to touch. It was physically painful to watch. She did not look away.
How could you?
All the power Halil gained, all the years I lost.
Lada lifted her head higher. I did it to save your life. I would make the same choice again.
Mahmed sat, refusing to look at her.
I cannot think about this right now. Not with what just happened.
Ahmed. Little Ahmed.
A curtain came down over his face, as though he had cut off all thoughts of Lada's betrayal until he could sort through them.
Radu put a hand on Mahmed's shoulder, but he stared at Lada.
Thank you, he mouthed. She did not acknowledge it, or the immense gratitude welling in his eyes. She owed him a debt. Nothing was more important to him than Mahmed's trust. Perhaps it would have been kinder to break that trust and force a removal. Maybe then Radu could be free of the impossible love he carried. But she could not do that to him, not when it was so easy to take this blow on her own shoulders.
They will think I ordered Ahmed's death, Mahmed said, oblivious to Radu's feelings as always. Halima was with me when it happened. I will have to tell them. It was Huma. It was not...
No, Lada said. They will think it was your order no matter what you say. If you claim it was your mother, it will make you look like a murderer and a liar.
What am I to do?
Lada thought of what she would do. This was a time for power, not subtlety. No one could question that the Sultan was in charge.
Make it law. You know what your father's brothers did. The wars they fought are still raw wounds. Your father had to kill them all eventually. Make a decree that when a Sultan is crowned, it is legal for him to kill his brothers for the security of the empire.
Mahmed had never looked at her with genuine horror before. But he did now. She stopped herself from taking a step back and steeled herself against the fear that, between this and the revelation of her betrayal, she had lost his love. She would not be weak to avoid his judgment. That was not who she was.
You think my mother was right to do this? Mahmed asked.
I think... Lada pushed away the image of hopeful, happy Halima, glowing as she talked about her son. The son who was being murdered even as she spoke. Did she know yet? Had she learned her whole world had been taken from her?
I think sometimes when balancing a nation against a single life, impossible decisions must be made.
Huma made the decision. Whether it was right or wrong is beside the point. It is done.
If I make that law, I am already condemning one of my own sons to death.
Lada had not thought of that and cringed at the accusation in Mahmed's eyes. Did he think her so monstrous that she craved the death of his sons. She shook her head.